Hello and welcome to The Hearing, our music show here on the John and Scotto YouTube channel. I'm John.
I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, on to this week's album, which is from 2018, World Domination by Bandmaid. Yes, I said 2018. This is probably the newest thing we've ever reviewed.
Well, we've only reviewed so many things, and well, most of them are from the 80s.
Well, I mean, music-wise, we've only reviewed a few things. I should point out, this channel's only been going for a little while, but we've been reviewing movies for 8 years. And I'm including, as an audio podcast, and I'm including movies in that. I don't think we've reviewed anything that recent. This came out on Valentine's Day, February 14th, exactly 3 weeks ago as we were recording this review. And I've probably listened to it 10 times in those 3 weeks. Little disclaimer, I'm a big fan of the band, have been since the summer of 2015. This was your first time hearing them.
Yes. I think I've heard just general, like, a couple clips online. Yeah, my latest,
you know, showed you a few things before this. I first found out about them when the video for their song Thrill showed up in my YouTube recommendations after I'd watched a bunch of videos by another Japanese band that I like called The Pillows. I saw the name, I saw the band in a white room, which was the thumbnail. The video is just the band playing in a white room.
Yeah.
I saw the maid costumes, I saw the name of the band, I saw the guitars. Wasn't expecting more than a good laugh. Ended up really liking the song. Also, shout out to the Bandmaid Fans Worldwide group on Facebook. I'm probably going to be mentioning them quite a bit. It's really the only place I've had to discuss the band in the last couple of years. So, getting back on track, Bandmaid are a five-piece all-female Japanese hard rock band based in Tokyo, consisting of Seki Atsumi on vocals, Miku Kobato on vocals and rhythm guitar, Kanami Tono on lead guitar, Misa on bass, and Akane Hirose on drums. And yes, as their name suggests, they wear maid costumes. Well, most of them wear maid costumes.
They wear maid costumes.
Misa stopped wearing the maid costume somewhere between the first and second album. And Seki has kind of been transitioning out of it, I think.
Yeah.
Around the second album, she went to just an all-black maid costume. And I think as of the last album, she got rid of the apron. It's really just a black dress at this point. And just before anybody calls me on this, I know that the first three albums were technically mini albums because they only had 8 or 9 songs. I'm going to be referring to them all as albums just to...
That's a normal album length, honestly.
Yeah, they're technically called mini albums. I'm just going to call them all albums for efficiency's sake.
This was kind of like a 90s, you know, CD length album, you know? That it was just too much back then, you know?
And they formed in July of 2013 by Miku. They were formed by Miku, who had previously worked in a maid cafe. That's a thing in Japan. It's just a normal cafe, but the servers wear maid costumes. And Miku found Kanami through guitar covers that she put on YouTube. Kanami had previously performed with Akane. She brought her in. Akane knew Misa through a music school that they attended. And then they auditioned Seki, who had a solo contract with Platinum Passport, their original record company, because it was decided that Miku didn't have the right voice for their kind of music. That's their official story. And this is everything I'm about to say about their history is pure speculation on my part.
Yeah.
But they had their first album out 6 months after forming. No one can do that without a contract already in play.
Right.
Miku had previously been in a pop group called Lil Kumin, and they'd put out a couple albums independently. I suspect she had a contract off the back of that, and Platinum Passport probably wanted to put together a rock thing to compete with another Japanese band called Scandal. No, not The Warrior, not that Scandal. So I suspect there was a contract already in play when they put the band together. I mean, I can buy that she came up with the maid thing and scouted the instrumentalists, but yeah, they had to have had a contract.
Well, the important thing is that they are really playing this, right?
Oh,
this
isn't
just like some monkeys.
They play their own instruments. They play their own instruments. They're brilliant. Misa, Kanami, and Nakane are great players. And this and the last album are kind of turning points for them because they didn't write anything on their first two albums.
Okay.
They wrote one song on their third album. They wrote 9 of the 14 songs on their previous album, Just Bring It. And they were involved with the writing of every song on this album, except for the last track, which is a cover.
Okay.
They were involved with the writing. There were 3 songs that have a co-composer and co-arranger, but they had their hands in every track. And 14 minus 3, that's 11 tracks entirely written and arranged by the band. So they're a real band now. And before we go any further, just want to mention that links to the album on Spotify and YouTube will be down in the description. I don't edit in any of the songs that we're reviewing just because I don't want to risk a copyright strike, but it's enough to, listen along with us. You know, pause the show if you want to listen to the track before we talk about it.
Cease and desist are just, you know.
Yeah.
We want to avoid any imperial entanglements.
Exactly. And that brings us finally to track one, I Can't Live Without You. This, I'm going to start off with a criticism, even though I love this band. They're one of my favorites.
You were hoping it was that soft rock ballad cover, right? I can't even remember the songstress that sang Can't Live Without You.
Oh, I can't. I don't even remember a song by that title. Other than this, this was a fun but kind of forgettable album track, and I think the first two should have been swapped. The second song is called Play. That would have been the better opening track. But since we're on Can't Live Without You, it's you know, pretty boilerplate hard rock. I do like the kind of thrashy triplets in the first verse. They go a little. They have a definite thrash influence. It shows off there. And this also shows Konami's, who writes most of the music, her tendency to arrange the verses a little differently. She kind of develops the second verse. It's not just a complete restatement. And it really shows off Akane's kick drums. She loves her double kicks, and they're all over this album. It's really her album.
Yeah.
And she plays them very musically. She doesn't just roll, which a lot of metal drummers do. They just kind of roll the double kick. She uses them musically, sets up, you know, polyrhythms with them, which
right.
is but like I said, it's kind of the it's forgettable. It's an album track. Anywhere else in the album, I wouldn't have complained about it, but it's not a lead-off.
It is their lead-off song, yeah. So you would expect. It reminded me a lot of Heart.
Interesting.
I think she has a very Nancy Wilson quality to her voice, which is of course. Which is, of course, really high, you know, praise.
Yeah.
I mean, Nancy, especially, because I mean, Nancy's the one.
And Wilson is the singer. And Nancy Wilson was a guitar player.
I just thought I had the other one. Oh, you're right. Yeah, Ann Wilson. Yes, that's what I meant. Ann Wilson.
So, yeah, I can definitely hear that. Yeah, as you mentioned it, yeah. Anything else?
You know, it was weird the listening to it in two different ways, this song in particular. When I'm using these headphones, which are, of course, much larger and I get a much deeper sound, they were doing something. It was like a nice contrast between her voice and how it was very roughly produced, if produced at all, versus the music, which is, I mean, throughout the album, it's, of course, really tightly produced. Actually, then when he used like the smaller headphones, you couldn't really tell the difference as much.
Psyche's voice, I love Psyche's voice, but it's always a little just on the edge of breaking.
Yeah.
Yeah, she has a very raspy voice and she just barely hits some of the high notes, which I think gives them an intensity and kind of a rawness that, you know, the music doesn't really have because, like I said, it is very produced.
But the way they produced her vocals, like they hardly did anything to them. I mean, it was very fuzzy, you know, in a lot of places I caught. But I only caught it when I was using these headphones.
The better headphones.
When I listened to them at work on my earbuds, you couldn't really tell the difference as much. Uh-huh.
And I use these all the time, so yeah, I don't know if I really caught it. I wish I had better headphones.
It is interesting to listen to an album and to the same album through the same source, but using two different quality headphones, you're just kind of like, whoa, okay.
And I've only listened to it on Spotify yet.
Yeah.
I mean, I have the expensive, you know, Japanese import
CD. I was going to say, wasn't CD, this the DVD. One you spent like a ton of money getting imported?
I've bought their last three albums as imports. I've paid the import price for the last three.
And I just came out on Spotify before you got it?
Yeah. thankfully. Because my CD took, or my CD took a while to get here. It came out on Spotify just after midnight Eastern on Valentine's Day.
Yeah,
I was waiting for it. I finally gave up. I think it was a little after midnight, so I checked like 5 minutes after midnight. Gave up. Started playing WoW. Took a little break. Checked the Facebook group, and somebody mentioned it was up there. So I immediately like brought it up and listened while playing. Okay, on to track two, Play. I mean, the song is called Play. It should be the opening track. And it is just a lot more dynamic than Can't Live Without You. It starts with this great drum and I'm not drum and bass in terms of the genre, but Misa and Akane really kicked the song off with this very frenetic playing. And it just has a stronger message in terms of the lyrics. There's a line in the song, Be More Existent, which sums up the lyrics of this and really sums up about half of Mika's lyrics. Half of them can be summed up that way, and half of them are just unhappy or angry relationship songs.
Well, I didn't have lyrics to cling to on this.
True. I one of the members of the Face group, Kafka, translates lyrics. He has most, or they, I don't know if they're male or female, they have most of the album translated. I mentioned you. I asked you on Facebook, on Messenger, if you wanted it. You didn't say anything, so I guess I figured you wanted to.
I made it pretty deep into the album without really needing them, and then I was like, I could probably use them. But I made it pretty deep into it without.
How did you? What did you think about the mix of English and Japanese? Because I don't think I really primed you for that.
It does mess with you a little bit because you're not really sure. Wait a minute, that sounded like something I know kind of thing.
because most of their lyrics are in Japanese, but every once in a while there's a line in English. The Pillows do that as well. I'm not sure what the reason is. But then again, I had thought about that for a while and I realized there are some foreign expressions, expressions in other languages that English speakers use.
Right.
Capiche, things like that. So maybe it's something like that, or it's just something that we use it to sound a little, I guess, exotic. A bit of English sounds more exotic if you're not, if you're speaking another language.
And I was thinking, Mars Volta, it's an album that's on our list, actually, Francis the Mute, where he does lines in Spanish. He switches back and forth from Spanish to English. And I think I tried getting like a translation of what he's saying in Spanish, and it honestly still makes no sense whatsoever. But it's just you kind of live with it. Uh-huh. I mean, they were kind of nuts too while they were doing it. Yeah, there was no rhyme or reason to it. So for this, it's interesting because it's an adventure to just judging it on its music and its vocal quality, and not having any lyrics to identify with.
I used to not be able to take lyrics in other languages. It just bugged me. And then I got really into anime and heard a lot of opening theme songs in Japanese. And now I kind of, I won't say I prefer other languages, but it's a different experience.
It is. Oh, yeah.
When I'm listening to lyrics in other languages, I'm not analyzing the meaning of the song.
Right.
I'm just appreciating the vocals as an instrument.
Exactly. And I mean, it's just an experience to take. I wouldn't want to live there, but I mean, it's one of those things. Seeing theater in other languages the same way.
That's interesting. You have to, you get the story by actions and tone of voice entirely.
Yeah, I saw a Brazilian theater company back in, I forget what year it was. They do, what's the playwright's name? Eugene O'Neill plays, but in Portuguese. That's their native tongue.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it was.
Back to Play, so we don't sidetrack too much. Loved how much Misa was on this track. She solos over half of it. And the kick drums are playing right along with her. And there are some great rim shots in verse two. Rim shot, for those who don't know drums, it's when you hit the side of the drum, the metal part.
Yeah.
And it's often done either as an accent or an accident in a lot of cases.
Or usually when someone tells a great joke.
Yeah, or that. But she uses it rhythmically as just another tone on the drums. Yes, the thing's on. This song also is the first time Mika uses the line "Shake Your Body," which proves that she does come from a pop background.
Of course, and there's pop fused in with.
The vocals are pure pop. The melodies are, although the melodies are a little different than the typical pop melody, as you might have noticed, at least a Western pop melody.
Yeah,
a lot of them, and I've noticed with a few Japanese bands, they're in a pentatonic scale, which is a scale used in traditional Japanese music, or Asian music. It's also used in traditional Irish and English music. Musicians might know this, that a lot of times you hear that if you play just the black keys on a piano, it sounds Asian. It's because it's an F sharp minor or pentatonic scale.
Interesting. I mean, I was not getting that out of this, but I mean, that to me, a lot of the times they're channeling like Pantera or you know, 90s metal.
We'll get to Pantera, yeah.
Like in Play, I mean, it starts with a very heavy 80s feel. And then it goes into like a new, it kind of breaks and goes into like a new metal direction. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get the scale from like the 80s, late 80s to the early aughts or late 90s kind of thing.
And then there's this great kind of call and response with the guitar and bass. They kind of trade solos. And then just this great solo at the end, which just kind of weirdly ends the track. Because it she just goes up this scale and it stops.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. It's there's a couple of times where they do that on this album where it just stops. And it's of course always throws me at first, but I end up loving it. Speaking of one that threw me at first, onto track three, the only one. This is probably the poppiest thing on the album.
And I was expecting a cover of the Tommy Tune song, but you know.
You're pulling out these 80s references that are way over my head.
I don't know if my one and only is an 80s thing or not. I don't know what decade. Tommy Tune.
Oh, Tommy Tune. I thought Tommy Tune.
Tommy Tune is timeless.
Yeah, I went to Tommy Tune and he said Tommy
literally,
Tune.
You see the guy. He looks like he has not aged a fucking bit in like the 40-something years he's been around doing this, or 50 years.
This one opens up with some really interesting dissonant electric guitar, like picks, swipes and slides and just noise guitar.
Yeah.
And then it goes into this almost hair metal riff with a keyboard part.
I think it relies more upon the harmonies.
Yeah, yeah. And there's, again, some nice thrashy triplets in the verse. And the kicks really elevate the chorus because it takes this very melodic, poppy chorus and they just kind of smack you in the head repeatedly during it.
It's almost exactly what I was talking about with when we were doing the Information Society and the one song where the chorus just kind of went straight in. There was nothing playing behind it. You're just kind of like, you know, you really might want to do something with the chorus to like tell people that it's the chorus kind of thing.
Yeah. The kick drums are really the most interesting part of it.
Right.
But then, you know, we get another little deviation in the second verse, which is, again, Konami's trademark. And then it gets interesting when we get to the solo. Because everything slows down and almost goes jazz. And it's kind of this gets to this, you know, kind of ascending part when the vocals come back in. And there's this one guitar that almost sounds like a horn. It's arranged a lot like a horn part would be, but it's all guitars. And we get another chorus. And then it goes ska.
I do not remember going ska.
There's this little bridge section right before the last chorus. That is almost, you know, it's this kind of upbeat, you know, not upbeat in terms of happy, but on the upbeats thing that it's almost sounds ska to me. And then, you know, just choruses out. And now on to the title track, Domination. This is the first song where I could hear Miku's guitar. And I not just on the album, but I mean in their history.
Okay.
Miku started playing when Saiki joined the band. Because she was originally going to be the vocalist, but then Saiki was brought in. She was, you know, brought in for occasional lead vocal and mostly background vocals. Yeah. I think it was Akane who suggested she take up guitar to kind of fill things out live. So she's only been playing for 3 years, and I think this is the first time I've noticed her on the album because she plays as the Midas, which is a kind of semi-known guitar company. They've been around for a long time. It has a very kind of, I hate to say shrill, a bright kind of nasally tone, which is all on the left side. It's like I said, this is the first time I've really picked up on it. It does fill things out nicely, and it kind of just brings another element to the sound. Again, one of my few complaints, well, now on to one of my few complaints. I think the kicks are a little too loud in the chorus on this one. They really beat you over the head.
I mean, I can pay this one the highest compliment I can because they were very into System of a Down territory for this one, you know, where they're starting to get like a more prog metal sort of feel to it.
Okay, this isn't the one where I would suggest prog. There's a couple later ones I would, but I really didn't hear the prog on this one.
Well, just a lot of the I guess the accent that they're using, the
okay, the way they hit certain beats. Yeah, I can hear it as you mention it. This also has their longest thrash section so far on the album. They just go into this bit between choruses that's just straight, sounds like it's straight from an Anthrax album.
Yeah.
And then there's this great call and response between the guitar and the bass right before the solo that I wish had gone on a little longer until the solo came in proper. This is also the third single from, actually technically the second single, which is another kind of weird thing they did. Before the album, Daydreaming and Play were released on a single with a song called Choose Me, except it was Daydreaming and Choose Me were the songs on the title of, you know, on the name of the release. And those were the ones that got the video. Play didn't get a video. Choose Me did. So it's a little bit of a weird bit of weirdness there. So
it's, how do you promote albums these days? You know,
mostly YouTube and
but I mean,
you know, there's no MTV doesn't do videos anymore. So music videos live on YouTube.
I mean, if MTV still existed, I mean, it does, of course, but if they still, you know what I mean? If it existed in the way that it used to, a band like this would have a much fairer shake of getting into the US market. But yeah, YouTube can only go so far, you know, to build a fan base.
Well, they're also, they've played in the US quite a couple of times. Yeah. They've done a couple of European tours. They're really building word of mouth by touring. Hopefully they'll play more in the States. It's expensive to, you know, for a band.
Definitely.
There's a Dutch band that I'm a fan of called Stream of Passion. They toured Canada some years ago because a fan was willing to be tour promoter and foot the bill for it. You know,
and there's so many bands that are doing Kickstarters just to keep things going. It's really scary.
Band made mostly in at least they've done full on tours in Europe now, but their first gigs outside of Japan were conventions, because they're a Japanese rock band, you know, anime fans tend to find out about them. So they do, you know, they did Sakura-Con, which is an anime convention in California. They did, I think it was I-60 something. It was a gaming convention in the UK.
They haven't just toured the US.
No, I think I want to say Sakura-Con was their only US gig. I'm sure I'll be corrected by that about that. They may have done one or two others, but if they have, it's one or two others. Now on to track 5, Fate. This is where I hear Pantera. This is one of the ones that had outside writers. This was composed, co-composed and arranged and co-arranged by Kentaro Akutsu or Akutsu.
Yeah.
And you can hear that there's another writer in this track.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this one works or not.
The opening riff is basically Walk.
Yeah.
But they did something interesting on the verses with it, because again, they come in with a poppy melody with this very heavy riff.
I mean, I've heard so much Pantera on this album, so it's kind of hard for me to be like, oh yeah.
This is the first time it really stuck out to me.
I'm familiar with a lot more Pantera. Yeah, you know Pantera a lot more than that. Yeah, I mean, but this one is different because they've got these country harmonies going over it, kind of. And it's like, I'm not sure. I mean, it's an interesting concept. I'm just not sure if it works. I mean, I like hearing something different like this.
Yeah. At least they took a risk.
Exactly.
And my issue with it, and that issue, I mean, on the last album, stuff that was written by outside writers, you know, three of the four songs written by outside writers, I can't listen to. They irritate me. On this, I like every song. It's just there are two of the ones written by the two written by Kentaro Akutsu just aren't on par with the rest of the album to me. The structure is too conventional. It's one of the few songs, but I think those two songs are the only ones where it doesn't change up at all in the second verse, and it's just very predictable and a little boring to me. It's a decent song. It's just this is also one of the times where Konami, my only ongoing complaint about the band, she's just a bit too much of a shredder for my tastes.
Oh yeah,
you know, she's one of those, you know, fast shreddy kind of solo.
Yeah,
you know, get as many notes in per second. I prefer a bit more melody. A lot of people like the shredding, and she's very good at it.
That's you know, like they say with AC/DC, you know, you don't go to a brain, you don't go to a butcher for brain surgery.
yeah, exactly. And you mentioned AC/DC. One of the ongoing debates in the Facebook group is whether they should transition out of the maid costumes. You have to be taken more seriously.
I thought the debate would be, is rock and roll noise pollution?
And I've kind of always been of the opinion that I would like to see them eventually transition out of them just as they get older, because I love the band and I'd like to see them, you know, be around for a while. And, you know, going as they get into their 40s, the mid costumes are going to be a little ridiculous. And then someone mentioned Angus Young, who in his 60s still plays in a schoolboy outfit.
But he does look ridiculous.
But no one questions it.
But he does look ridiculous, though. Yeah.
But it's just kind of his thing. So I don't know. Maybe they could work.
I don't know. Then you got, like, no one questions also the Beach Boys. And that's a name that should have been changed.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
They shouldn't have gone into the 1970s with that name. I mean, they should have just dropped it. I mean, or went on to do something different.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, Childish Gambino is wisely dropping that name.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the first example I thought of when I heard the news. Like, yeah, you know.
Beach Boys, yeah.
Yeah.
On to track 6, Spirit. This has the most interesting sound to me because it is an overwhelmingly major key kind of uplifting song, both in melody and in harmony and in lyrics, but it's also very heavy.
I think, yeah, mix. Their whole chant rock thing that they were trying to do with Fate, I think works a lot better here. Yeah. And it's probably because with Fate, they were trying to do a little too cutesy with it, I think, maybe. Whereas here, they were just letting it go.
Yeah. And it's a very upbeat song. Lyrically, it's about, you know, not letting a bad day, you know, bring you down. Kind of getting over life's troubles. Loved the drum fill right before the chorus. I have to say, Akane is, I think, my favorite currently active drummer, now that Neil Peart has gotten his wish of 15 years and finally retired.
Wow.
Rush retired, if anybody hasn't heard.
Yeah.
I think Akane is my favorite currently active drummer. She's just amazing. And her fills on this song are just painfully good. And they go very thrash in the solo, which is something they did on the second album for a song called Real Existence. The solo comes in and they just, Misa and Akane just play as fast as they possibly can over the solo or behind it. And they also play, Akane and Konami get really tight on the second verse, on the little development section.
Right.
And Misa kind of dances around them. It's just this really interesting kind of polyrhythm they put down. Now on to one of the most interesting songs they've ever done. Probably the standout of the album, if not in quality, I think it may be in quality, but it just in uniqueness, Rockin' Me, track 7. This was co-composed and co-arranged by Tianawa, and Miku sang lead on it. Not Saiki. Miku has averaged, I think, one lead, proper, like, full lead vocal per album. They've also traded back and forth on a number of songs.
Sort of a Ringo of the band, eh?
Hell, everybody sang in that band. She mostly sings backup, occasionally sings lead. I kind of prefer her voice. It's a bit softer and a little fuller. Whereas Saiki has that cutting, you know, rock voice, which is why she sings most of it. I really didn't like the song at first, but it really grew on me fast.
It stands out, definitely.
Yeah.
The you know, really with that shuffle, you know, sells their sound.
Yeah.
It really sells their sound best, I think, more than anything else.
It's the only one that isn't like solidly hard rock or a straight up ballad, which we'll get to. You know, it's just something a little different. It gets nicely proggy on the pre-chorus. This is the first spot that really sounds like prog to me.
Yeah.
It's in 4/4 and Konami plays this bit in 12. So it's three to every one of the four. And it's not exactly a polyrhythm, but it just makes it feel a little bit off kilter.
Yeah.
And then in the second verse, it goes properly jazz.
Well, you got that shuffle.
Yeah, but it just, they hold, no holding back. They just go straight up jazz into the second verse. And then it gets heavy again. And then there's this heavy instrumental verse with this, everybody probably in the studio at the time, you know, screaming, hey. They probably roped in all of the engineers and all maintenance and everybody they could into the booth and just said, yell, hey. It's proper gang vocals. And on the track eight, this is the one that sounded like prog to me.
Well, this had a very Rush intro.
Yeah. The intro, the guitar in the intro is very Alex Lifeson.
Right.
And then it goes a bit poppy in the core, in the verse, which again, it wouldn't be bandmate if it didn't go a little poppy.
And this is at the point where I'm like, I wish I had lyrics.
It's funny you should mention that, because this is the one of the three or four that hasn't been translated yet.
Oh, yeah.
I cannot find a translation. And it's one of my favorites on the album, which is why I really want a translation. That and the English I can make out in doesn't really make sense. You know, I can't figure out what it's about.
Huh.
You know, Rock in Me is another one, particularly because it's Rock in Me, three words. Yeah. I really want the lyrics on that. But back to Klang. This kind of shows off their whole gamut, because it's proggy in the opening, a little poppy, but still heavy in the verses. The choruses are proper metal, you know, not quite thrash, but solidly metal. And then in the solo, it goes thrash. They kind of hit all speeds on this song, minus, you know, the ballads, which they've only started doing recently. On to track nine, Turn Me On. I don't think we need lyrics for this one. This is the second one co-composed and co-arranged by Kentaro Akutsu. And again, it's another one that's kind of predictable and conventional.
I feel you get more of a breakdown on this between the different players.
Yeah, you do later on. This, especially in terms of the riff and the verse, sounds a lot like a song called Shake That from their second album, The Beginning, which was also written by Kentaro Akutsu. He wrote the entire song in that case. They sound very similar. It's got a nice heavy opening, and there's a nice double time section in the second verse. It really picks up nicely. The guitar and bass duel pretty much in the breakdown, though.
Right. You get to hear like a good showcasing of the rhythm section.
Yeah.
And then a few other, you know, breakdown, you know, other instruments on their own.
It does get nicely chaotic toward the end.
Yeah.
And now on to track 10, Carry On Living. Proper metal, the first real proper metal, almost hardcore in the verses.
Right, very late 90s feel to it. Could be one of my favorite tracks on the album, actually.
Yeah, it's one of mine as well. I kind of go between Klang, Carry On Living, and the two last heavy ones before the chorus, Alive or Dead and Dice, which again, we'll get to. The only thing that really throws me about this one is on the chorus, the hi-hats play the upbeats. And it feels kind of disco.
Well, you're right. That's exactly, you know, a late 90s metal.
It is sort okay. Of thing.
Yeah.
I associate that with disco. And it just, I can't say I don't like it or I like it. And again, I've listened to this album a lot. I've been obsessed with it for the last 3 weeks. And I still don't know if I like that part.
Like, you know, I mean, it's something that Korn did a lot, you know?
Yeah. True. And they had a lot of hip hop and disco influences. And probably Konami's most melodic solo ever, which I appreciate. And then again, it gets nicely chaotic toward the end, like Turn Me On did. Track 11, the real curveball, the ballad. Actually, one of two ballads on this album.
I thought track 12 was the ballad.
Well, Daydreaming is a ballad too. Daydreaming is the first ballad. There's two ballads in a row.
Really?
I would say it's a ballad. It's just nice slow.
Did not think of Daydreaming as a ballad.
Really?
No.
Huh. So it's more mid-tempo to you.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's got a piano in there, and it's nice and slow. I mean, most people have considered this the ballad. There's a song called Awkward on Just Bring It, their last album. And just because I haven't name-dropped it yet, their first album is called Made in Japan, M-A-I-D in Japan.
Of course.
And their third album, the other ones I haven't mentioned, it's Brand New Made, M-A-I-D. Anyway, back to Daydreaming. This is generally considered their first ballad. Awkward, some say, is a ballad. It develops a bit too much for me. There are some fast sections. This is nice and slow throughout, except for the solo, which gets kind of torrential. I thought the piano was a nice change of pace for the album. This one also, it was their first single released last May. It wasn't until I was listening to the album when I realized, I kind of unintentionally, kind of instinctually parodied it. I turned it into Day Drinking, which works just as well. Especially with the English that's here. because it's you know, daydreaming, thinking about you, you know, I know it's wrong, but I still want us to be together. It's that's what the lyric is about.
It's wasting away in Margaritaville is the, are the lyrics.
Yeah. But, you know, during the solo, it gets nicely dramatic, and Kanami just shreds it up, which is a nice change of pace, because then it goes back to the more melodic ballady stuff. And there's just some nice rhythms in the second verse when Misa and Kane come in, because it starts with just guitar and piano. And now on to, apparently, in your opinion, the real ballad, and then Anemone. I stumble on that word occasionally.
Yeah.
This had a really interesting vocal. There's a bit of a debate in the Facebook group whether it's Psyche or Miku. I'm reasonably sure it's Psyche because she has a this kind of deep, raspy speaking voice. And that's what it sounds like on this song.
Okay.
It's also, I think, maybe, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, bandmate fans out there, possibly the only time an acoustic guitar has shown up on their albums.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's the first acoustic guitar I've heard on their albums.
I mean, I actually have my notes that you know, this was a nice change of pace, you know, for the rest. It was like, yeah, the first time I was actually glad to hear a ballad on a metal album. Because usually it's just like, oh, really?
I think that's why I hated Daydreaming at first, because I heard it as, you know, coming from the perspective of a child of the 80s, who, when you hear a ballad from a metal band, it means they're selling out. You know, I heard Daydreaming and I'm like, oh, no, here's the sellout song. It grew on me. Anemone is still growing on me, because it is a proper slow ballad, but it's kind of off kilter in a lot of ways.
And it's okay to have a ballad on your metal album. Just don't do fucking three like Metallica. Well, okay?
Yeah, we don't need to talk about the Black Album.
Yeah.
So it starts off with this really slow, pretty, kind of off kilter verse, just acoustic guitar and vocal, really. And then the band comes in. On the chorus, on this instrumental break after the chorus, and it just gets really loud and just torrential again, like they did on the last track. And then there's this almost march like drum part on the second verse, which I thought gave it a really interesting groove. And then a blues solo. Kanami doesn't play blues normally, but she pulled it off nicely. And again, it comes to a sudden stop. Like on a vocal too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not quite as sudden as Pull Me Under by Dream Theater. That just ends completely surprisingly. But it just ends on the end, you know, the end of the vocal line. The song stops. There's no kind of trailing out with a bit of a, you know, melody or a bit of music. Just kind of pulls the wind out of the song nicely, and it just gives it a nice finality. On to track 13. They get loud again. This is called Alive or Dead. Nice effect on the vocal. It's just a little bit of distortion and a little bit of an echo. Just makes it stand out a little bit. And there are some really nice off-time hits on the verses. And they really kind of throw off the rhythm in a nice way.
I was starting to get fatigued at this point. It was just, you know, it was just too much to take in.
and the chorus, again, oddly poppy, but I liked it. Don't really have a lot of notes on this one. It's just a good, solid hard rock song.
Yeah.
Some interesting timing in the verse. On to Dice. Well, Dice is the proper ending for the version I have on CD, which I haven't ripped yet.
Oh, okay.
And there's two versions. There's a version that comes with a DVD or Blu-ray, depending on what player you have, that has a concert video. And then there's the regular version. Dice is the last song on the Blu-ray DVD version.
Obviously, the regular version has a bonus track. Clay, right?
Yeah. Now, this one opens with drums and then into bass, and it's just Akane and then Misa for a while. And it kind of sounded familiar to me, but I couldn't place what it was reminding me of. Someone in the Facebook group mentioned a Black Veil Bride song that begins kind of similarly, has a similar rhythm, and I think they're in the same key, but that's about the only similarity, I think. And the fact that it starts with drums and then bass. And then I realized it reminds me of You Could Be Mine by Guns N' Roses. Which starts again with drums and then bass. I mean, it's a very different, you know, structurally, you know, they're not playing the same song, but it's similar in that sense. And
I think this was the one where I was reminded of Nirvana, or there was, oh man, now I wish I could remember which track it was. It only hit me on like the second listening.
I didn't hear any Nirvana. This is the one where Miku's guitar is the most noticeable. In fact, she plays a counterpoint to Konami in the second verse. Miku's actually playing a single note line. I'm so proud that she's pulling that off after 3 years of playing. Because I've been playing for over 30 years. I know where you're at 3 years, and she's made tremendous progress. She's a great rhythm player. This also really nicely shows off Konami's tendency to kind of play high rhythm parts that are almost melodic and almost a lead part during the verse. And there's a bass solo.
Right.
Misa usually she's often taken solos. She usually slap pops them. This is just played with a peck, and it's the only proper bass solo on the album. I was so glad to hear her take a proper solo. Misa, I mentioned Akane. Misa's another one of my favorites. She's an amazing player, particularly because she can really show off when she wants to, but most of the time chooses to just serve the song, and you don't really notice the bass.
It's why I had to ask at the beginning that they actually do play their own instruments, because they're really fucking talented.
Yeah, they're brilliant instrumentalists.
Right. It's you know, I wouldn't say shockingly so, but I mean, it's just like they're really doing this on their own.
Particularly because of the name and the maid gimmick, you know.
Well, right. You got to give it to the front. So, I mean,
and especially,
you don't expect them to be this good of players.
And off the back of Baby Metal, who, you know, even though, well, actually, I think Baby Metal was out before Bandmaid. Who blew up completely, you know, a year or two ago.
Yeah.
You know, and people see an all-female Japanese band and they think they compare it to Baby Metal. And, you know, they don't play their instruments. So, you know, there's that shock. And I like how it gets kind of, again, a nice slow kind of poppy bit in the bridge just after the solo that kind of gradually speeds up to the end. I don't know what you were hearing about hearing with Nirvana. I heard no Nirvana on this album at all. A lot of the other bands you're mentioning, I can definitely hear, but not Nirvana. Then again, I don't like Nirvana, so maybe I don't want to hear them. And the regular version ends with a cover of a song called Honey. That's the English title.
Yeah, I just have it down as Cymbals.
Yeah, it's Honey. this is a cover of a song originally written and recorded by Muku. It's spelled M-U-C-C. And it's a very faithful cover. I've heard the original. I think it's a slightly better version because Saiki has a better voice than the singer from Muku, I think.
I was going to say, who's the original band that did Honey?
Muku. Spelled M-U-C-C. It's pronounced Muku. The beginning of this song is a complete mindfuck.
Oh, yeah. It's...
Because it's not just synth, because they've done synth openings in other songs. There's a song called Puzzle on the last album that begins with synthesizers. But this is almost EMD.
Right. This is the first thing where every other part of this album kind of fits my argument about how the state of rock and roll and how a lot of this could have been done in 2003 and it would just been, okay, but this one... is actually of our time period. Although, if they're saying Black Veil Brides, that 14, track 14 would also, you know, be of our time period as well.
Although they borrowed a bit from Guns N' Roses, I think. So that's
older. There you go, hey, late 80s.
But then after this kind of very electronic opening, it just comes in with this really interesting guitar riff.
Yeah.
Which I really like. I just wish that I listened to a bit of Muku off the back of it, and I wish the singer had a better voice. and again, it gets kind of hardcore. There's some interesting spoken vocals, which are a thing they've messed with a little bit throughout the album.
Yeah,
and it's just something a little different for them. A nice, weirdly melodic solo during a thrash section. I wish I could give them credit for this. I mean, they played it, of course, and arranged it, but it's a very faithful cover. So I guess that's it for World Domination.
Yeah, I wish they could have ran the keyboard intro a little bit more in with the rest of the song rather than have the two as completely separate.
Well, that's what the original was. They copied the original exactly. So that's more a criticism of the original.
Yeah. Well, you're our cover it though, so
you could change it a little bit. That's true. They were strictly faithful to it.
Yeah.
So would you recommend it?
Yes, I would. I mean, I haven't even gotten into the lyrics yet, so I'm like a baby step into it. And yeah, the majority of it is interesting. I mean, I did like a little experiment and started with the middle of the album later,
I
closer to
noticed
recording.
that because we actually were reviewing it at the same time last night. I when I was on Spotify, on the right side, it shows you what your friends are doing, what
Yeah.
they last listen to. So as I'm reviewing it, I look up and I see you're like three songs behind me.
Well,
And
right.
as we're reviewing it at the same time, and then I'm on this afternoon and I saw you were listening to it again.
Well, yeah, I mean, I listened to it last night when, taking notes, and then I kind of listened to it at work, of course, just to, to get another feel for it. And then tonight, I decided to just go from the middle because, yeah, it is, I mean, especially if you don't have lyrics to get into, it is a long, I mean, it's almost an hour.
It's just shy of an hour,
Yeah, so it is a lot
And
to take in.
particularly if you're not used to listening to lyrics in other languages. I've been doing this for a few years. I listen to a handful of Japanese bands, a couple of Spanish bands, so I've gotten accustomed to it. But if you're not used to hearing that, I imagine it can get a little overwhelming. And I'm very surprised. Yes, I absolutely recommend it, just to get
Yeah.
that out there. I'm a huge fan. And I was really nervous about this. Because but back when we were putting together the list of what we wanted to review, you had mentioned that you were hesitant to put your favorites, your Desert Island Discs, on the list. And I didn't understand why until this week. I maybe it's a different reason, but I was really nervous about having this bashed. Particularly because I would like to share it with the Facebook group this episode. And I wouldn't have done that if you had bashed it. All right, so that's it for World Domination. If you enjoyed this video, please give it a like. Also subscribe if you haven't. Down in the description, you'll find the album on, as I said, on Spotify and YouTube. You'll also find our links, social media, our album list, every album, like I said, movie, because of our other shows, movies. Every album that we have listed that we want to review. I don't remember where it's up to now. Yannick is the placeholder. So YONAKA, they're the placeholder. Everything before that is in order. It's going to be an interesting ride. You'll also find links to subscribe to the audio version of this show on RSS and iTunes.
Next week.
And our, I knew I was forgetting something, our voicemail and our email, in case you have any comments. And of course, you can leave them down there. And if you have any albums you'd like to hear us review, please let us know through one of
Of
those means.
course.
Next week, one of your picks,
Yes.
Iron Mike Eagle. What album?
Open Mike Eagle.
I did it again. You corrected me before we started recording, and I did it again. Yes, Open Mike Eagle. What was the name of the album?
It's his latest. Make sure I get the name right because it's
I think I put it in the wrong notes.
well, you got really loud for a second there. Brick Body Kid Still Daydream.
All right. And
So it's almost a concept album about the
okay.
projects.
Open Mike Eagle is kind of an alternative rapper. Just to
Yes.
give you everybody a little heads up as what's coming. Very interesting stuff. So we'll be doing that next week. And until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there
There
you
you
are.
are.
Thank you.